Well, thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here. This is my first time attending a Philadelphia Society meeting, and I'm looking forward to lots of interesting discussions with you. The title of my talk is Bastiat and the French Connection, and it's a deliberate reference to the wonderful Academy Award-winning film The French Connection, made in 1971, starring Fernando Rey and Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider. And it's a story about drug trafficking from Marseille to New York by hiding cocaine in someone's car that they don't know about. And what I want to talk about today is another kind of trafficking, and this is trafficking in ideas. And in many cases, the ideas that were being trafficked for the classical liberal movement are far more dangerous than heroin or cocaine. Just ask the Politburo of the old Soviet Union. What I want to do is to talk about the quite complex trafficking in ideas that went back and forth across the Atlantic from both America and France and back again over the last 250 years. This has been a two-way process, and the interaction is something that I find fascinating. The first examples of this trafficking is between France and America. France is the central location of the Enlightenment. Many of the American intellectuals in the pre-revolutionary period were voracious readers of French books and other Enlightened texts. Donald Lutz has done a very interesting study of the contents of libraries in colonial North America and has come up with a kind of top 40, which were texts which were common, you know, throughout the colonies in both private and public libraries. And of these top 40, eight of them were French books that were not translated into English. This is quite interesting that so many American intellectuals read French, particularly Thomas Jefferson. If you go to his library displayed in the Library of Congress, they've got a beautiful new section now where Jefferson's library is in the shape of a circle and the cases are enclosed in glass, and you can walk behind them or in front of them. And so many of the books on his shelves are in French or Italian. So he was multilingual in his interests. So there's and Lutz's study of American library and purchasing habits is very interesting. I suggest you look at that. Another example of the interchange of ideas in the first part of the late 18th century and early 19th century is, of course, the number of American statesmen and politicians who went to live in France to work on American business. And a good example of this is Benjamin Franklin, who was the U.S. minister in France from 1778 to 1785. And I'm so pleased that the hotel administration put up a picture of Benjamin Franklin outside this lecture as a kind of teaching aid for this talk. But Benjamin Franklin is a very interesting example because he's one of the first instances of the reverse traffic. The French were fascinated by Benjamin Franklin, and when he was minister in Paris, he dressed as the French thought that most Americans looked like, you know, with his fur hat and his rough-spun coat, espousing the virtues of the American frontiersman. But being the entrepreneur that he was, Benjamin Franklin had his Poor Richard's Almanac translated into French to coincide with his period in France, which became a bestseller and just perpetuated this image of American folk knowledge and ideas about self-help and so on. There are other examples I could talk about, like Jefferson and Gouverneur Morris and Thomas Paine and John Adams, who lived in France and absorbed both French ideas but also told the French about the experiment in democracy and in republicanism that was going on in America. Another interesting example of French to America trafficking in ideas is Thomas Jefferson. Now, as a retirement activity, Thomas Jefferson decided to translate the works of D'Estaing de Tracy, who was a leading French economist and political figure in the 1790s. And Jefferson was so taken with his ideas that he translated two of D'Estaing de Tracy's works, one a series of commentaries on Montesquieu and one a treatise on economics. And he was so impressed with this that he wanted to make D'Estaing de Tracy's two books the foundation reading for the new University of Virginia that he was involved in establishing, which is very interesting, I think. Another example of the French to American transmission of ideas is the translation of the the economist Jean-Baptiste Say's treatise into English. There was an English edition, it was an English translator by the name of Prinsep, but there was an American edition as well, which was edited by Biddle, who happened to be a Philadelphian. He worked in, or he served in the voluntary militia here in Philadelphia in the 1810s, and he introduced a whole series of editorial matter into the book, and it went through 14 editions in the early 19th century. And Jean-Baptiste Say's treatise became the primary textbook for the teaching of economics in American colleges up until the Civil War, when people like John Stuart Mill's textbooks replaced the more radical free trader Say as the elementary textbook for American students. Another example that I want to spend more time today talking about is Frederick Bastiat, who was writing in the 1840s. So we have this first phase of French ideas influencing America, which is Du Destrassi and Jean-Baptiste Say, and then Frederick Bastiat is the third one. And he's writing at a time of the French Revolution of 1848, when the French, for the first time, are trying to create a welfare state in the first few months of the revolution after 1848. And Bastiat is one of the leading figures in opposing the introduction of government-subsidized and paid-for unemployment, the National Workshop Scheme. His books were immediately translated into English, including an American English version, which sells quite well in the United States in the 1840s and 50s. And Bastiat's ideas are not, many of his more theoretical ideas are not translated into English quickly, but American economists who read French adopted many of his ideas about the nature of exchange, the nature of the provision of services in a voluntary fashion being a sort of central core to what the free market is all about. His ideas were taken up by professors of economics here in the United States, people like Perry and also the sociologist William Graham Sumner, who taught at places like Yale, which is hard to imagine today being hotbeds of free market economic thinking. Unfortunately, Bastiat's ideas become less and less favourable or favoured in America as the 19th century wears on. And it's not until the 1930s, when there's a rediscovery of Bastiat's economic theories, that we see a real impact on American conservative thinking. And that's what I want to talk about more in detail today. If you want to read about the 19th century French and American exchange of ideas, please have a look at this paper, which is on the web, and I'm sure Lenore will have the URL that she can make it available to you if you request it. But I want to look at the renaissance of Bastiat in post-World War II America. Now, it's a tragedy that he disappeared from sight, not just in America, but also in France, in his native France in the 19th century. As the century wore on, his ideas about free trade and limited government dropped out of favour. But the rediscovery of Bastiat occurred first in America, not in France, which is very interesting in its own right. It began with the journalist, the publisher, Raymond Cyrus Hoyles, R.C. Hoyles, who was a publisher in Ohio, decided to move to California to set up what became a whole chain of newspapers. He began with the Santa Ana Register, but his Freedom newspapers, Freedom Press, was quite influential, and he was one of the leading figures in the struggle against the New Deal. And he would write his daily editorial comments in, they would get published and syndicated across all these other newspapers. I don't know how, but somehow Hoyles discovered the writings of Bastiat in a late 19th century translation, and he decided to republish Bastiat using his own printing presses for the Santa Ana Register. And that's how American conservatives came to know about the free market, the radical free market ideas about Frederick Bastiat. And what he did was he would write new introductions to these older 19th century translations, where he would show the relevance of Bastiat to the struggle against the New Deal. And here's an example of one of the introductions. He said, "The new forward to what is now called social fallacies by the libertarian journalist was the writer Rose Wilder Lane." And this is what she said in this introduction to this new edition. She said, "Frederick Bastiat is one of the leaders of the revolution whose work and fame, like Aristotle's, belongs to the ages. Aristotle, too, was a pioneer in an unexplored continent of human knowledge. He did little more than blaze two or three trees where the wilderness road began. He showed the way to a new world that he did not reach. What modern science owes to Aristotle, a free world will someday owe to Bastiat. And he made the connection between Bastiat and the New Deal even more explicit when Hoyles himself, in a new introduction to one of Bastiat's books, he said, "The reason for republishing Bastiat's economic sophisms is that we believe Bastiat shows the fallacy of government planning better than any other writer of any period. Since he wrote a century ago, his work cannot be regarded as party politics today. It deals with fundamental principles of political economy which outlast all parties." Working with R.C. Hoyles in California at that time was Leonard Reed. He was the head of the Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce, and that is how he became interested, I think, in a more radical version of free market economics, working for Hoyles. Reed decided to move to New York, to the New York area, to set up the Foundation for Economic Education. And inspired by Hoyles and his reading of Bastiat, Reed decided to introduce to begin a large publishing and translating project to bring more of Bastiat's writings to the knowledge of Americans. So in the 1950s and 60s, he began a project which ended up with the translation of what we now know about Bastiat, his selected essays on political economy, an essay, The Law, the Economic Harmonies, which was done in a new translation, which are very, very fine. Well, one of the other things that brought Bastiat's ideas to the attention of Americans at this time was the journalist Henry Hazlitt, who was writing for the Wall Street Journal. And he was one of the few voices speaking out in favor of free markets at the time. And he, in turn, wrote his own popularization of economic ideas called Economics in One Lesson, which is actually a plagiarism. He took it from the subtitle of Frederick Bastiat's essay on the seen and the unseen. So Henry Hazlitt was another figure who was reintroducing free market ideas into the American conservative movement. Another person who's very important is Ludwig von Mises. When he fled Europe and moved to New York City, he got a job at NYU. He wasn't paid a salary by NYU, but various business people put money together to pay him a salary, and he ran a seminar which became extremely influential in the revival of Austrian economics in the second half of the 20th century here in America. And he spoke very favorably about Bastiat, and some of his more radical students at the time attending his seminar set up their own Bastiat circle. And the people who were involved in this circle is sort of like a who's who of important post-World War II libertarian and classical liberal thinkers, Murray Rothbard, Leonard Digiow, Ralph Rako, and others. And these were young men, freshly minted PhDs or graduate students, who adopted the name Bastiat as the name of their society to promote and discuss free market ideas. And another person who's very interesting at this time is Ronald Reagan. Now, his case is a little bit more difficult because no one yet has done a thorough study of his note cards. In his presidential library, there are hundreds and hundreds of these note cards where Ronald Reagan would write down interesting quotes that he would use in his speeches. And this is something that is just crying out for a graduate student to look at, and I would strongly recommend that to you if there are any of you looking here looking for a topic. Let me just say something briefly about Ronald Reagan's connection with Frederick Bastiat, is that it's quite possible that Reagan had read some of the publications of R.C. Hoyles or Leonard Reed in the 50s, and this is one way in which he may have come across the ideas of Frederick Bastiat. I don't think Ronald Reagan read French, so it must be through the English translations. But when he was working for General Electric, he was their public spokesman. And one of the things he had to do as their traveling ambassador was to go around the country talking to the thousands of General Electric factories and their workforce to tell them about the ideas that the management of General Electric were interested in pursuing. And Thomas Evans has written a book called The Education of Ronald Reagan, which appeared in 2006, where he describes Reagan's evolution from a a typical Hollywood liberal in the American sense to the kind of Ronald Reagan that we now associate or think about. He says, this is Evans, he says, "I trace Reagan's revolution from liberal to conservative, from actor to politician. The changes took place during the time when he served as host of the General Electric Theatre on television. His contract also called for him to spend a quarter of his 8 years That's between 1954 and 1962, with the company touring the 40 states in 139 plants of GE's far-flung decentralized corporate domain. Reagan learned more in his GE years than a set of prepared remarks. He became familiar with such diverse thinkers as Mises, Lenin, Hayek, the Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu, Jefferson, Madison, Hamilton, Henry Hazlitt, and Bastiat. And in an interview with Manuel Klausner in Reason magazine in 1975, he explicitly mentioned his debt to Frederick Bastiat. So if a PhD student, the study of how Reagan came to know about Frederick Bastiat and other classical free market economists is a wonderful dissertation topic. Since the wonderful pioneering efforts of the Foundation for Economic Education in the 60s to bring more of Bastiat in English to the American audience, there's been a rediscovery of Bastiat sort of 40 years later. To coincide with the 200th anniversary of Bastiat's birth, Liberty Fund decided to begin publishing the complete works of Frederick Bastiat in six volumes, and we're now getting volume three, so we're halfway through the project. Volume three is in production now. But this is having an interesting effect in the other direction. Right, it's now time for America to start re-influencing the French in their understanding of free markets. Right, this has been going on back and forth repeatedly. The pendulum is now swinging in the other direction. One of the things about the French free market tradition in the 60s and 70s was that if the very few French economists who were free market had studied at Chicago and were influenced by Milton Friedman. And so free market ideas in France got the impression was that this was an Anglo-Saxon plot to overthrow and destroy the glories of the French nation. If only, yes. But with the American interest in Bastiat through the Foundation for the Economic Education and others, the French have now come to realise that they have their own domestic free market and free trade tradition, which they hadn't really known about before. And so there's this extremely exciting flurry of interest amongst French publishers and think tanks and so on to rediscover their own heritage. And this is a very promising, this kind of blowback, if you like. They planted the seeds of economic liberalism in America and now it's blowing back to hit them in the face. Hundreds of years later. For example, I was talking to the head of the Institute, the Molinari Economic Institute, headed by Cécile Philippe, and this has been going for about 10 years in Paris. And when Cécile began working on her think tank, she said that no one paid them any attention, that they didn't exist. And she said, now they're the go-to people when the French press or the French media want to talk about free market ideas. They still don't like these ideas, but they go to her to get her opinion. They used to dismiss free market ideas as saying, this is an Anglo-Saxon plot to overthrow the glory of the French state. And she can now point to them and say, no, in fact, we have a glorious free market tradition that goes back to Destutt de Tracy, Jean-Baptiste Say, Frederic Bastiat, Gustave de Molinari, and they are even more radical and more free market than anything the Anglo-Saxons ever did, which I think is extremely amusing. What's happening is that free market ideas are now coming back to haunt the French. They're coming back from America to bite French statists where it hurts them most, in their collective or collectivist derrieres. And Frederick Bastiat is having an important part in that process. Thank you very much.